from the biggest stages in golf.
64 foot, 5 inch putt to win his first major championship. That was storybook stuff, Gabe.
To the courses right here in Wisconsin.
Made sure we had plenty of chicken salad.
She gave me a member's service.
She most certainly did.
Salad.
Again, the guy at the front gate thought you were an employee. Maybe she thought you were an employee out here playing as well.
We're talking majors, tour drama, and the rounds we wish we didn't have to post. This is On the Tee, alongside PGA Tour Live Stephen Watson. Here's Gabe Neitzel.
Not just PGA Tour Live's Stephen Watson. We're going to have a full house today on this special edition of On the Tee. This is the Going to the Masters edition, because we are also joined by Nolan Murphy, who has filled in on this fine program before.
Friend of show.
Well, Brian D going to be joining us as well. And I just had the idea, guys, that... I mean, how crazy is it? It's so hard to get Masters tickets. So incredibly hard. And you're so lucky when you get to go. And we had four people in our GKB Milwaukee office who all, like, separately, not like one person won and we all got to go together. Four people separately got their tickets in a different way. So I just thought that this would be a fun way to kind of get together, have us share some stories, and kind of let people know what it's like being on the grounds the week of the Masters.
It's insane odds. Great to see you both. It's been a while as the honorary starter. I introduced myself to one of Gabe's friends when we saw each other at the Masters. They're like, who are you? I'm like, I just fill in on occasionally on the show. They're like, do you want to hang out with Gabe for a while? I'm like, he doesn't want to hang out with me for that long. And then we went on our ways. But I saw Gabe at the Masters.
We did. And then we saw Matt LaFleur. As well.
You did.
Yes, you did not. You just missed it. Like, we literally saw Matt LaFleur walk by, and then here comes Nolan as we were hanging out.
Same type of hair, obviously, me and Matt LaFleur, for those watching on video.
Gabe, do you say anything to Matt LaFleur in that situation?
No, I didn't. So my buddy...
I would have, by the way.
Yeah.
Obviously not part of the draft process. He's doing the same thing I am at the Masters, so...
He is. My buddy is a huge Packers fan, even though we grew up in Horicon together. So he's a huge Packers fan, lives in Texas now. And he's the one who spotted LaFleur. And I turn him like, oh, yeah, sure enough, there's Matt LaFleur. And he wanted to go say something to him. I'm like, dude, just leave him alone. Like, you are probably one of just like five people that might recognize him today. Just let him enjoy the Masters. So I had to physically restrain my buddy from going and trying to chase down Matt LaFleur Monday at Augusta National.
Yeah, there's not another place in the world where celebrities and professional athletes can just walk freely amongst patrons. And that's what makes Augusta National so special. Nobody has their phones. Nobody's asking for pictures or for autographs. You just kind of allow them to be a patron just like you. And I walked in the gates with Chris Paul. Just like arm in arm next to Chris Paul. I'm walking the grounds and Eli Manning just like rolls by in his green jacket.
Yeah.
Jason Kelce holding court at the first tee as I was walking by. It's just really a unique dynamic out on the grounds there with celebrities.
There's
and professional
no other
athletes.
Place where you're like if Chris Paul's going to literally any other sporting event, there's a different entrance he's going.
He's getting mobbed. Like autographs everywhere. I mean, that area between 1 and 10 by Butler's cabin is a who's who. But just like for the general public, you can just walk right. Basically where Gabe and I met up with each other, and I was so worried of making Gabe late. I didn't bring a watch, so I just kept asking people what time it was. I got there for the first time ever to meet Gabe at anything early. But everyone is right there. Everyone, green jackets, notable celebrities, but they are all, and I think that's what's the beauty of all this, everyone is just intertwined and happy to be there.
Yeah, so, the meet and greet philosophy is also fascinating. When you don't have a phone, you have to be like, I'll meet you here at this time, this moment. If you're not there within 10 minutes, you got lost in your day and carry on.
Well, because we got up to the first tee probably 20 minutes early. Like I told Nolan, hey, let's meet by the 10th tee at around noon. And we got done walking the course, and we'll get to more of that in a moment, but it was like, you know, 22, and all of a sudden I just hear, hey, Gabe. I'm like, oh, Nolan must be early. He goes, yeah, I didn't have a watch. Like, this is the one time you need a watch. You need to have the watch.
The one place you probably need a
watch would have been
case,
good.
In case you get separated from the people you're even with, or like, hey, if you're going to go do this, we'll meet you back this place this time. It's super old school, and I absolutely love it. And also joining the program, Brian D.
What's up, boys?
So Nolan and I were there on a Monday, and what I really am looking forward to about this roundtable is we all kind of got separate experiences. Nolan and I got a practice round day, as did Brian. But Brian, you were there on Wednesday,
yes.
Which of course is also famously the par three day.
Correct. It was amazing. And hitting quickly on the celebrity thing, I took a little flack for the way that I approach two celebrities. So number one, I got right in at 7 a.m. Like, we waited in line at right at 6 for an hour. And
you're
I
a
had,
big gnome guy? You just
no, I didn't get a gnome. Didn't get a gnome. I should have got a gnome. I learned about the gnomes after the fact. That was on me for not doing my homework. I had a couple of import beers before 9 a.m., right?
Okay.
So I was feeling myself by 9
o'clock. Thought
you were
going to a Bills
game, huh? Yeah, baby.
A couple crow's nests early on?
No, I avoided the crow's nest. I'm not much of a wheat beer guy. They had them all. So this was the other weird thing. This was the weird thing about this year's experience. Normally the beers are served in the green plastic cups.
Yeah.
But apparently they were having foaming issues, so they put them in the clear plastic cups, and the import just looked the best when they were sitting out on the table, so that's what I ended up going with.
I don't know. Crow's nest slapped pretty hard in the green cup.
Well, but that was a special green cup that does say crow's nest. So that was different than the other green cups that they have that people stack.
So anyway, I get a little liquid courage in me, and we're standing on the walkway between 13 green and 14. You know how it kind of cuts over there? You know, staring at that legendary 13th green with Ray's Creek right there. And I see this 6'5" guy over my left shoulder, and I realize it's Dan Orlovsky of ESPN. So I'm like, oh my goodness, it's Dan Orlovsky. And nobody's really talking to him, right? He's just kind of standing there. I'm like, I'm gonna break down the walls here. So I went and I gave him nucks, and I said, hey, thank you for doing that thing with your son. It was Autism Awareness Month. I thought that was really cool. And he said, hey, that's awesome. I appreciate you saying that. They got to make me stop crying on national television, which was amazing. And then I name dropped Evan Cohen. I said, yo, I work with Evan Cohen every day. Next time you're on Unsportsman, like, please give him a hard time for me. And he said, from who? And I said, don't worry about it. And I didn't give him my name because I thought that he would just forget it and not care. And I took ribbing from my brother and my friends all day for not telling him my name.
Oh, you should have went in on the bar mitzvah stuff. That's been the core of Unsportsman. Like, so, Evan and Dan go to the same bar mitzvahs. I actually left Evan Cohen real quick. I left him a voicemail from an Augusta National phone, and he couldn't figure out who it was because I did a bit that only an unsportsmanlike fan would get. And 2 days later, he goes, yeah, I just couldn't figure out. I go, oh, somebody called me from Augusta. Like, it was normal.
So that was one. 10 minutes later, we're in a grandstand behind 12, and I see Richie Incognito, the former maybe – not as well.
He was trying to go incognito.
Yeah, he was trying to go incognito, and rightfully so, because he's a little bit of a controversial
career. I can't imagine how
many
people outside of you would have recognized Richie
Incognito.
So
this is where
incognito.
It gets crazy.
Well, isn't he huge?
I saw him walk up.
Sure, but like, you might see him and go, oh, that guy might be an offensive lineman. Like,
so
offensive linemen, they're wearing helmets.
I grew up in Western New York. I'm with four Buffalo Bills fans. He played for the Bills for a number of years. So I was like, I'm gonna go say what's up. So as we were walking down, I patted him on the shoulder because I was coming from behind him, which is like an interesting move of like, how do you approach? And I shook his hand and I said, hey, thanks for being a great Bill. Cool to see you out here. And unbeknownst to me, the seven people in the row in front of him were Bills fans and heard this interaction and immediately yanked their heads. And I said, yeah, that's Richie Incognito from the Bills. And all of a sudden, like 1,000 people were all over him. And scurried out of there.
Oh, you were that guy.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the moral of the story is maybe pump the brakes on the import beer until like 11 or noon.
Did you last the whole day?
Oh, yeah. Okay, we had a great day. 25,000 steps. The par three, getting back to, you know, master stuff. What an incredible event that is. You can't buy beer over there because it's a family event. The proximity you get to the players and seeing them interact with their families is amazing. We stood behind the ninth tee where Frankie Fleetwood obviously had his moment at the end of the day. But seeing the players come through there and interact with their families and taking them out of that limelight and just making them parents was really cool to watch. John Rahm's daughter like climbed up towards us and you're waving at them and the parents are giggling. Like it humanized the whole experience in a really cool, lighthearted, fun way. And to juxtapose that feeling with the tense feeling the rest of the weekend of the competition and how lighthearted everybody was Wednesday afternoon to first thing Thursday morning, bam, this is serious. We're playing for a green jacket. It was really cool to experience.
No, can you just move that microphone that's like sticking straight up in the air?
Is it blocking my face?
No, just
the other way.
There you go. There you go.
It's in your face.
Tech guy.
Okay. Am I gonna have to walk over there and move? There we go. There we go. I'm just trying to get it out of the shot, man. I'm just trying to follow the instructions from Josh. All right. So what was the first thing everybody did when they got there? What was the first thing that you decided, hey, this is what I need to do? Steven, what was the first thing?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I had this huge plan I had been thinking about this day for a long time, asked a lot of people's opinions, walked in, and I was like,
so this is also your first time?
First time.
And this was Thursday of competition.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to go to the North Gate. And then the night before, I was lucky enough to get a ticket to join my parents, and the three of us went, and the guy's like, you have to go South Gate. And right away, I'm like, you're messing with the plan, man. All I wanted to do was walk through the North Gate, see the practice facility, and see the clubhouse, and see one. And we went through the South Gate, and the first thing we did was we saw the sign that said 30 minutes of a wait for merch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that sounds good. We should take advantage of that.
Yeah.
It was not 30 minutes.
Wow.
That was the only mistake Augusta National made that entire day. It was about an hour.
Yeah.
But we did knock out the merch right away. My whole plan was merch in the middle of the day after I walked to the golf course. So right out of the gates, we flipped that plan upside down, but I'm happy we knocked it out early.
That was our approach, too. There were four of us, and each of us got lengthy lists from our significant others and my mom. And we were like, all we want to do is go sit on 12 and hang out and like enjoy the day. So we strategically got there right at 6 in the lot, in the North Gate, stood in line. I think that's a great thing to do next time you go is go through that. It's like walking down the main lane at Magic Kingdom, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, it's the main entrance to Augusta National. But we flew right into, like, no line into the pro shop, which was the most chaotic place I've been in my life in about 18 to 24 months. It was every man for himself in there. But the four of us got in and out and checked all of our stuff by 7:45 or 8 and had the rest of the day to just, you know, peruse the course and hang out, which was awesome.
Yeah, I listened to the insiders, the people that went, and they're like, even though I parked by the South Gate, I actually parked in D27, which I remembered, Dorsey 11s. I thought that would just be an easy thing all day. I went in the North Gate because they're like, first time there, go there. And someone I trust very well in the golf space outside of Wisconsin, he's like, you just have to walk the course. I knew I had this time with Gabe coming up in about 3.5-4 hours. I didn't want to be pressed against that. So what I did is I walked in, went to one. I think I took my picture by the scoreboard, had someone take it, and then I literally just walked one all the way through nine. Along the way, stopped, took some more photos with the digital camera. Monday, you can bring in the digital camera. I think that's through Wednesday, right? Digital camera? Or
I think you're correct, okay. Yes.
We didn't bring one on Wednesday.
Did you see people with one?
Oh, yeah. They were everywhere. Okay. People had the Kodaks, too, like that you could flip with your thumb and roll, like the disposables.
My joke is that these are also old. People forgot, like, even how to use these. Like,
apparently, they're making a comeback.
Oh, definitely. I mean, definitely.
I've heard they're making a comeback.
The week on Amazon, I'm sure they, like, jumped up in terms of demand.
On 9T at the par 3, this couple that was probably 55 handed one of them to, like, a 20-year-old to take a photo, and he couldn't get it to work because he had never seen a disposable camera before.
That's
he
sad.
Didn't know he had to, like, crank the Rolodex part of it.
Oh,
so.
My. That is sad.
Yeah, it was an old moment.
Gabe got in, I think, a little. I probably didn't get in until 8. You know, okay. I could have made it in faster through the South Gate, but I made it through 1 through 9 before like 11, and then I bought some time. But, you know, Bubba was out there at that time.
Yeah.
So I saw some Bubba access, but it was also nice for it not to be crowded for me to be able to literally walk behind every tee box as far as you could go around every green. And also, I think everyone can relate here. I was actually by myself. It is the longest time as a father and someone that's married that I have spent by myself in like years.
Without a phone?
Without a phone.
Without a phone,
just
yeah.
in my thoughts.
It was so nice.
It was so peaceful. It really was like, you know, there's all sides, different types of therapy out there. That is the best therapy.
Augusta
walking
therapy.
Augusta in the morning by yourself. I definitely then went and got an egg sandwich. That was the first thing I ate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we walked the course right away. Walked the course.
And you did all 18?
We did all 18 before noon. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so we were staying in a hotel that was a mile and a half away. So we had debated if we wanted to walk there or just, and I'm glad we drove because I don't think they're anticipating a lot of people just walking up there. And the problem that I found out later after we went, this was the first year that the parking lots opened and closed.
Mm-hmm.
The parking lots always just used to be open. But the problem became some people started camping out.
Yeah.
And they didn't want that. I'm assuming for a number of different reasons. First and foremost, probably being liability reasons.
Yeah.
Right?
Consumption
and,
issues,
yes.
I would say.
Yeah, exactly. And Augusta National just want to take that on, understandably so. So because we were on Washington, our motel was right on Washington, a mile and a half away, the street that runs by Augusta National. So traffic, by the time we wanted to leave, was already backed up all the way to our motel a mile and a half away. So by the time we got into the parking lot, it was 6:40, 6:45. You get in line, takes a little bit of time to get through there. So we saw the merch, like they were temporarily closing the lines when the line got too long. So, okay, not a big deal. We don't need to do that anyway. We walked past the first food spot. It's like, okay, that's kind of a long line. There's plenty of them out there. So we just started walking. And that's where, again, my tip to you, if you're going through the North Gate, the first thing you want to do is walk. I told this to Steven last week. Don't go to that. Don't go to the first one because so many people go there. You're going to wait in line. Go. There is one that is off the right side of two.
Yep.
So that's where I got a coffee. I got a breakfast sandwich, and we were able to continue.
There's little high tops right there. Yep. Like if you wanted to just like, you know, for 1 second, have a bite, put your coffee down. That's exactly where I went as well.
Yes. I did both, unfortunately.
I didn't even get a beer right away. I felt a little guilty.
I started with coffee.
Yeah, guilty. I went coffee. Yeah, I think I went iced tea and coffee. Like I had two drinks. They're so cheap. I'm like, I'll take two. Yeah. I don't know what to do with my hands.
So I was the first one of our group of four out of the pro shop at 7:45. And we said, let's meet by this tree and like that. You know where the tables are right outside the pro shop? Meet by this tree at 8. It was 7:45. I had 15 minutes to kill. I jumped in the concession line, and I got a chicken biscuit, a coffee, and a beer. And I stood underneath that tree at 7:45 in the morning, smashing those things.
Yeah,
you can't draw up a better start to your Wednesday. You can't.
I will say, so I feel like I was giving you guys the feeling that I was upset that I walked through the South Gate.
Yeah.
The first thing I saw was the 13th.
That's what I'm saying. You see
How could you be mad?
And I walked in, and I went,
well, because
wow.
What's great about the Southgate, because the first time I went in 2019, we had no idea where we were going. So we just went through the Southgate.
Yeah.
And yes.
Like we had no traffic. It was easy to get in. It was so smooth. Walked, you know, after we got through merch, which was a bit of a wait.
You have the signs of, okay, you can go over to 5 or
it was like I walked into 13 and that's my favorite hole. I got to see that green and then I turned to my left and I was like, that's 15. That's 16. Yeah. Oh, up there? Yeah, that's 12.
You know what it's like?
I just kind of got lost in the, like, just the moment of how special it was to just, like, walk into this. It felt like I was walking into a stadium through the woods.
So again,
it's out of my mouth. Like, wow.
You went through the South. That throws a wrench and a curveball into, I want to walk 1 through 18.
Yeah.
So what did you do?
Oh, I had no plan from there. I got lost in the day. My only, from that moment on, it was, I just need to touch every hole.
Okay.
And I have no agenda anymore. And I feel like that ended up being the best plan, was to let the day just come to me and to my parents, right? Like my dad hadn't been there in 25 years. My mom had never been there. And so it felt like we were all experiencing this brand new for the first time. And the first thing we did was we got our chairs as part of the merch pull.
Sure.
And we put our chairs at the layup spot on 13. Cause I said to my mom and dad, I was like, 13's playing longer. A lot of guys are going to bail out here to the right. Let's put our chairs here. We didn't come back to them until 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
But we came back and watched guys go through number 13 and JT, Spieth. Yeah, all these guys were laying
good,
up out
some,
to the right,
groups
and I got to
late.
Watch them hit nippy wedges into 13 green at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
As the sun's hitting the perfect
spot.
Yeah,
and it was that was really special.
What did you put in the back of the chairs? Like, because I
good
saw
question.
Some people had AT&T business cards. Yeah. Some people had their, you know, small town Georgia. I didn't bring any business cards.
No one was looking for leads.
No, not exactly. I would have needed to take photos. You can't take people's business cards out of
He's
their
chair.
He's
got a disposable camera taking the pictures
disposable
of business
camera.
Cards.
Me taking photos. Hey, great qualified leads. If you have access into the Masters all the time, what did you do to like identify
always
your
be
chair?
Selling.
My mom was given a heads up to bring like a name tag. So she had Watson written on a couple of pieces of paper. And then you slip it in too. Yeah. A little thing the size of a business card.
So
and you leave it there. And the rule at Augusta, if you're unfamiliar, is you put your chair down anywhere you want.
Yeah.
And if it's not being occupied, anybody can sit in it. And then once you get there, you just tell them that's my seat. And we sat in people's chairs on 15, 16, 9, 18 throughout the whole day and just like never felt bothered by it. And it was just, it's a really cool part of Augusta.
Which is, I love that part. I thought about getting a chair, ultimately didn't, because we didn't go through until later in the day, but I just love that part. It just feels so civilized, right?
Yeah.
Like no one's going to be mad if they come up to, and you're sitting in their seat. They're just going to, excuse me, that's my seat.
Yeah.
You just say thank you, and then you move about your day.
One guy, on 16, we're watching Rory come play through 16.
Yeah.
And he tries to get us out of our chair as Rory's about to make his birdie putt on 16. Like, standing in front of my mom as Rory's, like, bringing his putter back. I'm like, dude, just wait until he hits the putt.
So that is where we, it's not even stealing seats, but we plop down on 16 and watch guys skip golf balls for like an hour and a half there on the practice round on Wednesday, which was amazing to watch. You took the words out of my mouth about seeing the course for the first time. The only thing I can equate it to, for those who haven't been fortunate enough to go, is like seeing a glimpse of Lambeau Field through the tunnel for the first time when you walk in there, right? It's like that magic moment of like, holy crap, there it is, right?
It's a real place.
And the entrance points, it's weird. Like, you've never been there, but it's so familiar. And that's the magic of the Masters for me, is the course is the star every single year. And you feel like you've been there a million times, even if you've only been there once or twice. The north entrance dumps you out basically on the 18th green, where like you see all of the winning shots of Rory collapsing to his knees, and the south drops you off in Amen Corner. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I go to 16 and I just, there's a little lull in the action. I was like, I want to stand where Tiger was. So I walk over and just to see what that eyesight would be like, to envision where that pin was in the lane that he took. And we saw Rory took a very similar lane this past Sunday. But 15, I you can't get to the spot where Rory was, but I stood a little further back just to appreciate, you know, the 7-iron that Rory hit in 2025, that ultimately being kind of his signature moment of winning the Masters. And that's what, to your point, separates this golf course from almost any other, is every single year there is a shot and you can be in that moment and visualize it and just understand the difficulty or what that moment meant to the game.
There was a funny moment that came to roost on Sunday. At about 11:45, the par 3 was getting ready to start when I went on Wednesday. So we were walking up the hill backwards on 10.
Yeah.
Where Rory's drive on 18 ended up, basically.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
On Sunday.
Correct, on Sunday. And
When you say Rory drive on 10.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's the house.
Unfortunately, it's got a lot of meetings over the years.
So I won't make any comments about the physical makeup of this person in front of us. But in that spot, about 10 feet in front of us, a gentleman let out he had had too many beers and egg salads together probably at the same time.
No. Yummy.
And let
was
out,
he wearing a pimento cheese hat?
No, he was not.
Those guys?
But he let out in front of the group of four of us a 30 to 45 second long fart right in that that stretch. So Sunday I'm watching and Rory sprays it off to the right. And I texted my group of buddies. I'm like, that's where that guy farted. That's where his ball is right there. So those moments come to
you. You know what's ironic about that? Apparently a guy puffed a big puff of cigar smoke in Rory's face in his shot.
So is that when he backed off?
He didn't back off.
Okay, but he backed off a hole earlier, and I know you guys are going to get to the golf a little bit, but like
he backed off on 12.
Really back off on 12. Like,
well, that was another cool thing about the course that I had forgotten. I had gone in 2009, so it'd been 15, 20 years. You can smoke on the course and nobody cares.
Yeah. So much smoking.
I have not seen that many cigars in a while.
Yeah, again, it's stepping through, whether it's the North or South Gate, you are stepping back in time.
Yeah.
You are, and literally, including the smoking. The smoking has stayed. It's been eliminated from a number of public areas across the country. It has not been eliminated from Augusta.
I will tell you, though, the birds are that loud.
They are.
That was one of the things I was interested in, is how loud are these birds? They are that loud.
Let me ask you this, though, because this was a conspiracy theory that came up in our group. Did you see a bird?
Huh?
Did you see any birds?
I blacked out. I got lost in the day.
You didn't see a bird, right? So there is a conspiracy
theory. There's some tall Georgia pines out there.
I saw some speakers.
Did you climb up a tree?
I didn't bring my binoculars to go bird watching,
You would
Brian.
Think that a bird would like fly over your head or land in a fairway or something. There's no
Probably all trained not to fly. Like, they can't be on the broadcast.
They train the birds.
Yeah,
yes.
No. I mean, people
can't. They probably built an invisible fence.
The greens crew can't be on the broadcast.
Well, the other greens crew question
if we are going to buy into the conspiracy theory that there are no birds, I feel like we also have to buy into Nolan's conspiracy theory of, what if the birds are just trained?
What if the birds are trained
because
to avoid the area?
Augusta does have that kind of money. I'm just saying, I think both are equally plausible. Yeah.
The other crazy thing about the grounds crew there, and you just, obviously, it's probably the prettiest place I've been on the planet, period. Like, you go to coasts in Europe, and it's just gorgeous. between 15 green and 16, there are three or four like 100-foot tall pine trees that weren't there last year. How do you plant a 100-foot tall pine tree wherever you want it and make it look like it's been there forever?
Very
like,
carefully. Well, that's what they that's what they did behind 50. They've got those three. Yeah.
It's crazy. Because
they went down with the storms that they had, and those are three kind of signature trees.
Yeah. That was one thing I noticed 15. About 12, how many trees they lost in those storms. Mm-hmm. 12, I always felt like, was a lot more of a barricade. Left. And
10 was thinner than I thought. Yeah. I mean, for Gabe, you have been before.
Yeah.
I thought then watching the following four full days, I was like, how did I ever even watch this before without not going? I know not everyone can articulate to that or have that opportunity, but like everyone now, you know where things are. Like, you know, Spieth had a moment on Thursday, which was not a moment later on, where he hits out of that magnolia tree to save par on 18. Yeah. I walked right past that magnolia tree and like, I didn't think of it then, but I'm like, how would you get out of there? So just the ability, I don't know if you feel this way, Steven, Brian, you've been before, but like, I just know what things now look like on television. Like totally. I can feel myself kind of like pacing through the course because, you know, before I felt like, especially if you're watching like a replay, it's just so much action. Unless you're following the group, and Augusta gives you so many different television distribution points, but if you're watching some of those like really condensed replays, you're just like, where am I on the golf course? Yeah, like, I'm so turned around. And now I can at least get myself around.
You just have no frame of reference for how much slope there is on that course and how much elevation change there is on that course. The one area that paints it most clearly to me is on three, that short par four where guys will hit 325-yard drives. And you're like, oh, man, he's just got to chip up to this green. And then you realize the green is 30 feet higher than where he's hitting this ball from. And we stood there for 30 minutes watching guys on Wednesday practice that shot, and they'd get like 4 of 50 shots to stop up there. Like, it's impossible.
One of my favorite moments from Thursday was on the third green. I watched Tyrrell Hatton give the third green the middle finger as he was walking off.
I feel like he's done that before.
Yeah, yeah.
I texted this to Gabe over the weekend. We were talking about guys that we wanted to win or like would be just totally off-putting to win. I thought Russell Henley winning would have been just a tragedy. Like with all the names in the Georgia boy.
He's a Georgia guy. Oh. Hatton winning as in the clubhouse would have been a tragedy.
This was the fight we got into. I find Tyrrell Hatton.
Yeah.
Like weirdly endearing because he hates himself and his game so much that it's somehow relatable. You know what I mean?
He doesn't hate his game. He's a grinder golfer. But he doesn't hate his game because it's never his fault.
It's real.
It's always the golf course's fault. Yeah, he's the cannot call Augusta National a piece of bleep and think I'm going to respect you and want you to win there.
The best the guy that you hate facing, but you love on your team.
Yes.
Russell,
he's not on my team.
So Henley? What? I'm just saying, he's that type of guy.
Henley, I saw the one of the better tweets I saw was Russell Henley looks like if Coles was a golfer, which I died laughing at.
He's like the
that's really good.
He's the Kirk Cousins of golf.
Yeah,
that is really good.
To go back about what it looked like in person versus what I anticipated coming in. Like I heard about the undulation. 10 was without question the most dramatic.
10's
to my
a sledding
eye.
Hill. Like you could just fly down.
And I walked it in reverse and back down. Walking in reverse was probably more dramatic than coming down the hill. I was blown away by the green complexes.
Yeah.
Like I know Gabe's going to ask me this on the tee. I don't know what the hardest green is on that golf course. When you stand on all of them and you look at them all, but there's not an easy one.
15
that
sticks
much,
out
that
to
much
me.
I can tell you, like, there's not an easy one.
Well, seven
with the
and
conditions
eight,
we
like,
saw this
up.
Week, with how dry it was, there is not an easy green on that golf course.
And I know, obviously, these guys have played it so much, but the first time I saw 15, that's what I remember in 2019, is there's a walkway kind of in the just up the hill from where the layup area is. They usually try to hit it past the walkway. And you stand in that walkway and you go, it looks like it's just the end of the earth if you go long. And there's space back there because there's the trees and the pond. And we saw, I mean, who went in it on Thursday? Somebody went in. Patrick Reed went in on Thursday, and someone ended up just short on Thursday.
Two golfers make a 9 on 15. Yeah. I watched Freddie Couples do it, and I watched Robert McIntyre do it right in front of me, and both of them put it in the water twice.
Patrick Reed is who Gabe thinks Tyrrell Hatton is. Does that make sense?
Like, no, because I know who Patrick Reed is. He's a cheater.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, awful.
I think
on Sunday
Augusta
too.
Membership would have been a lot more unhappy if Patrick Reed won a second green jacket and if Tyrrell Hatton won his first.
Did you guys sit on the hill on 16? I did that, and I didn't think of it, but I was so glad. I probably spent 20 minutes there. It was a really cool spot because there was a lot of father-son combos there, like younger kids, and I'm like, God, I hope I can bring my son there someday and just sit there because it kind of had like a spring training outfield baseball feel, and like you could see, obviously, 6 a little bit. You could see 16. It was just like this so endearing family moment.
That's honestly so like the one thing I'm always blown away by, because when you're watching on TV, you just get so sucked into, this hole, this hole, this hole. How on top of each other some of the holes actually are.
There's a lot of amphitheater there, right?
Yeah, because you see like the crowds, and if you get there early enough before it really fills out, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, 6. As I'm walking down 6, that's 16 right there. And how the holes intersect more than you think if you just watch on TV.
And for what it's worth, the par 3, I didn't realize because I hadn't been there to that portion of the course before. The whole thing's a big amphitheater. Like you can see like 7 of the 9 holes from wherever you are at any point, which yields such cool moments of people hitting hole-in-ones or Frankie Fleetwood. Everybody knew what was going on in that entire area. Like, it's just, it's an unbelievable place. They do everything A++++.
Yeah, I think one of the moments that will stand with me was I was on the back of 16 watching Rory on 15. You can see him through the trees. You can see the green. You can't see the putt. But because you're not distracted by anything. You just let your eyes wander. And I know Rory's bounce, and you know where he is on the tee sheet. So I was like, Rory's on the green, and I bet he's putting for birdie right now. I didn't know. And he hits the putt, and he gives like a little pump, and you watch the ball, or you see the crowd lift up, and like you feel the energy come at you on 16. And that's what I think separates Augusta more than anything is the way that the sound travels. And even if you see it or you don't see it, like there were moments where we didn't see action and then your eyes go to the scoreboard and the leaderboard and you watch a name change or a number change and then there's a secondary roar. And it's just a really unique way to enjoy sport even when you can't see it.
Yeah, it's your only tracking is sound and scoreboard.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're watching the golf in front of you, there's not many things I like am jealous of from my Masters experience, but like, yes, seeing live tournament play would be a totally different atmosphere because you have to be so intently on sound scoreboard. Because if not, you don't really know what's going on.
Players talk about it too. Like Rory got asked after he won, was he scoreboard watching? And he said he doesn't normally, but because of the makeup of Sunday and if I don't win, I want Shane Lowry to win. Like he was looking at his friends on the scoreboard. Like
when did he punt on that? Like, 10?
Well, he was walking up.
CBS punted a lot earlier than that.
Yeah. He was walking up 15.
Oh, Lowry played on Sunday?
I didn't know Dustin Johnson played the weekend. Did they ban him from television?
He walked up on 15. There was a shot of him looking at the big scoreboard and trying to figure out what Scotty was doing. So it's really cool and unique in that sense.
What was the best thing everybody ate? Your favorite thing that you had at Augusta National? Because the food is obviously always a big part of the conversation.
I'll happily lead here. I don't think it was even close. The Georgia Peach ice cream sandwich.
It's undefeated. It's undefeated.
Was out of this world good. I think probably my one regret of the entire day was not getting a second one for the car ride to Atlanta I flew out at 11 o'clock on Thursday night.
I had my first one at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And hey, if you would have told me I could do the day over, I'd have it at 7:30. It would be the first thing I eat on property. I was really proud of my move. I got the chicken biscuit with the pimento sandwich, and I took the pimento off the sandwich and put it on the chicken because, again, from my layers of research, I heard the chicken is a little dry. So I added the pimento cheese and had a coffee with that to start the day, and that was good.
Barbecue. Wow. It was a tie between the barbecue and the chicken salad. I don't like egg salad. Mm-hmm. SVP, I did hear this after the fact. He said to put the pimento on the barbecue.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Yeah, which I might have liked, but dude, the barbecue was just. I had it a couple different times. I mean, I probably had like 6 sandwiches. Like I did. Yeah, I didn't eat.
I didn't eat
flying there. I'm like, I'm not going to stop on my way back to Atlanta and get some fast food. I'm eating here. I'm loading up. Mm-hmm. So the barbecue was insane.
Yeah, I think it was that meal I alluded to earlier, that chicken biscuit with the beer and the coffee thing in the morning.
What a tone setter.
What a start. The chicken biscuit's not dry if you wash it down with beer.
Yeah, that's fair. When you dunk it in.
Chestnut style.
So I did bookend it. That was the first thing I ate. The last thing I ate was the peach ice cream sandwich with a lemonade at like 4 o'clock at the par 3, which was just, I mean, it was refreshing at that point in the day, right? It was phenomenal.
So, I had the lemonade to like middle of the afternoon too. That lifted me up.
Real quick aside on the drink, I had two, I believe, Powerade Zeros. Because the first one was so good, and I loved the cup. So, like, you know, I was driving. I was going to have a couple refreshments, but I'm like, all these Powerade Zeros, I think Coca-Cola is a sponsor. Just kept going back to the well on those. Great cups, too. Obviously kept the cups, too.
Well,
efficiency play at that point, too. How many can I get as many cups by, you know, keeping the BAC below 0.08? So
I was so inspired by the peach ice cream sandwich that when I got home, my wife and I went grocery shopping up on the North Shore on Sunday morning. And I walked past the ice cream shelf and I bought a pint of peach ice cream and 10 macadamia nut cookies. And I made my own for Sunday afternoon. Ooh. There's still three of them in the freezer at home, which is
well, because again, the crazy part to me about the peach ice cream sandwich is usually when you have an ice cream sandwich that has actual cookies, it's really hard to get, like, usually the cookies are just so frozen that it's hard to get, like, a clean bite.
God, they were so chewy.
But they were just...
I'm not usually a sugar cookie guy.
It was the perfect balance.
Augusta is just...
Did anybody have the tomato pie?
No. I didn't, but I was curious.
Was that like a Hot Pocket, basically?
Yeah, it was like kind of like a empanada as... with like pizza in it, like marinara cheese in like a flaky croissant empanada.
It felt like
maybe the best savory item I had of the day.
It felt like a waste of calories at that point. You know what I mean? Like if I'm going to do 9 sandwiches and 8 beers and a couple of snacks and an ice cream sandwich, like the tomato pie was pretty low on the list.
When you go back,
get
the tomato pie.
I got a chicken. I want to hear from Gabe. I got a chicken club on my way out. It was all they had left. And they're like, you got to try the chicken club. I'm like, sounds good. It's still very good.
Oh, fine.
It was an awesome like B1. Like, and anywhere else, it's the number one thing on the menu. Just happened to be at Augusta. There was 5 other great things.
Yeah, other than the chicken sandwich, I love the breakfast sandwich. The breakfast sandwich was, I was not anticipating it to be as good as it was. And my regret there was not getting a second one.
Yeah.
I think, and that's about the only regrets I have, I think. Does anybody have any other, like, regrets of anything that happened throughout the course of the day?
I have a regret on something I didn't buy in the merch area. Okay. I'm happy financially I didn't buy it, but in the club collection area, I had this nice lady pull it down. It was a cream cashmere Masters hoodie with just the outline of the Masters hoodie. I mean, this thing was like $375.
Yeah. Sure. That was not there when I was there.
I know.
I would have bought that.
Steven, I think you know me enough. Like, I had her bring it down. I touched it. And I'm like, how much is that? She said $375. I'm like, oh, I'll probably just go get a
hoodie. Gabe and I have had this conversation many times about my Ryder Cup cashmere hoodie. I never regretted it.
I know. And I probably will sit there and think about that one for a long time. I just knew my wife was going to be like, hey, what'd you get? I'm like, oh, just a couple hoodies. Don't worry. Like, one that's $375. Then I would have, like, probably just kept in my closet. I'm not going to wear it out to, like, a bar. I'm not going to play golf in it.
You know, you wear sport coats from time to time. How many of your sport coats cost $375? You're going to wear that more than a sport coat.
It would have been something I would have taken just the most insane manicured. Like, what if she would have tried it? I mean, I might not have talked to her for a couple weeks. Like... So that's my one regret is this cashmere cream Masters Club Collection hoodie.
I think that you're not regretting it because you're just I see the stress in you just talking about
it. Sounds like you really thought this one out.
Yeah,
I was stressed in the pro shop thinking about it because I related it to all my friends. Is we've all never been wedding dress shopping. That is our version of wedding dress shopping.
Yeah, well said.
It is so overstimulating in there in the best first world reasons. But there's a lot of options.
I could have spent 4 hours in that place and felt like I didn't touch everything.
I needed an assistant in there just to dictate traffic.
I think my only regret was not, this would have gotten me kicked out, punching the guy in front of me at the hat counter. So for those who haven't been in there, it's not like you can walk up to a shelf and pick out what you want. It's like if you go to a concert, they have all the shirts displayed.
Yeah.
And there's a t-shirt counter, there's a hat counter, there's a hoodie counter, there's a women's apparel counter. And you go up and you say, can I get a 26 and a large and a 37 and a medium? And they run back and they hand it to you over the counter. There's 50 people working each of these counters. The guy in front of me at the hat counter, I needed two hats. I got one for myself, and I got one for Joshy, who's producing the show right now.
Who's who? It was his second hat request.
Needed two.
Yeah, because
I got
he went to two different palaces.
I got him a hat on Monday, and then he saw another one. He's like, oh, I want that one too. So he had a bride.
Well done, Joshy.
Who was there on Wednesday?
So I needed two
hats.
You
really benefited from this group making many trips.
Sorry.
Jeez. the guy in front of me, and you saw these merch hauls on social media all week, and they just felt gross. You know what I mean?
So, I'm sorry.
The guy in front of me at the hat counter walks up and goes, can I get 3 of 1 through 9? He ordered 27 hats, and the girl turned around, walked out with 27 hats on her arm like this and handed it to him. And it was just so clear this guy's
selling
going straight to Facebook Marketplace. You know what I mean? Like that part of the experience got a little icky and gross, but everything else was pristine.
So that's the only thing... again, at Augusta National, everything is just so great and well thought out of. And I almost got trampled getting my merch. Because, again, what they do is they close the line and then people just kind of wait around for the line to reopen. And that's what we had done because we thought it was going to open pretty quickly, and it did. But then it's just a mad dash to get there. I had a woman put her hand on my back like I was a fullback opening up the hole, you know, in order for her to get
Aaron
there.
Aaron Ripkowski.
Yeah, it was so...
You know, the other thing, too...
And then, again, you get in there and there's just so many people... I wish they could find a way to kind of tamp down the reselling. Because, again, if you're getting something for a buddy, that's one thing. If you're buying 27 hats, pretty obvious you don't have 26 friends.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting about the experience, too, is you don't know what's in there.
Right.
Like, you don't know what to expect when you walk in. Like, yeah, you see people wearing merch, but you don't know if it's from this year or the year before. And, you know,
Joshy did research. I knew exactly the hat I was getting for Joshy.
Yeah. Josh is on the influencer, social
big content
media handles,
creator for Masters Hats.
But what was everybody's favorite thing they bought?
I'm wearing it. I got this. I went to the clubhouse section and got the. I balled out a little bit. Got the Masters Peter Millar combo platter Q-zip hoodie jacket. Now, for what it's worth, some of this was pragmatic because it got really hot over the weekend at Augusta. Wednesday morning when we were standing in line before the sun came up, it was like 40 degrees and there was a cold wind blowing through those pines. So we were standing there in shorts and polos going, oof, this could be a long morning. So it was a half pragmatic, half stylish and want to decision.
Same with Gabe and I's weather, actually. It was chilly when we were there.
It was chilly in the morning, even on Thursday.
I'm glad I brought a long sleeve. The favorite thing I bought, I'm like in that zone. I have a young kid. I bought my son a Masters hat with that I wouldn't wear, but it had the Masters M with the magnolias wrapped around. Kind of like a kid focused hat with the Masters flag on the side. I just thought it was
cute.
I always kind of go like not too wild but different for him. I don't want him to like have to play the hits and have the normal Masters hat that everyone else have. I loved that.
It's the type of place that makes you think about your kids. I know it's a weird thing to say out loud. But my dad,
I don't think that's a weird thing to say at all.
I don't know. Like, I mean, it just does. Like, it's got that magical effect that makes you think about the generations of people that have been there before you and the people that made you love golf.
It's 90, the tournament's been going on for 90 years at the same place. And I think that because of the traditions of it, that's what it makes you think, where was I for this? And chances are you were probably with your dad, your grandpa, are watching that Sunday when so many of those magical moments happen. So I don't think that's a weird thing to say at all.
Yeah, and I think, you know, outside of myself, I bought my son is 6 months old. I bought him a 12 to 18 polo that he's going to wear for next year's Masters. And he's going to look so cool at daycare. It's going to be awesome. So yeah, it's got that magical effect on him.
There was a sweatshirt that I wore for On the Tee last week.
Yeah.
That was.
I saw it. I liked it.
The green crew neck with
crew neck.
I like that a lot.
Green crew neck was mine. And Steven, I'm guessing you've got something that's
there was
the most
damage.
Favorite.
There was I actually was pretty tame.
Okay,
I got a hoodie, I got a golf shirt, I got two hats,
bucket hat,
and I got a bucket hat for my son.
Oh, I tried the bucket hat on. It was too stiff for me.
No, not for me. I can't pull off a bucket hat.
Can you imagine covering up that face with a bucket hat?
That's great.
Are you kidding
me? The amount of money I would pay to watch Steven play a round of golf in a bucket hat is
with the yellow one
high.
Too? Like the SVP yellow one? They were just too stiff on the outside of the rim.
But I ain't Peter Malnati anytime soon. I found something that I fell in love with right when I looked at it. I have a Needlepoint Pinehurst scorebook that I play with in my back pocket. And there was a Needlepoint Amen Corner from Augusta scorebook. And I saw it. I didn't even look at the price tag. I just said, I have to have this.
Coming home.
That was by the bottle openers, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I saw that area kind of like across from like the Masters Tech polos and hoodies.
Yeah. And then the moment it kind of got out of hand where I was like, I need to leave here is I got my dog a Masters collar. And I was like, all right, I need to leave.
No, I got my dog a Masters bandana.
That's awesome.
Bubba was walking around in that thing for the party on Saturday.
My gear gets here this afternoon, which I'm pretty fired.
Oh, you shipped it. Good for you.
Oh, yeah.
Very savvy move.
Especially, my buddy carried a gnome onto the plane home. We flew home together in O'Hare. He's carrying the gnome as his carry-on.
I just don't get the gnome thing. I'm sorry. Like, I saw Shane Bacon, who did a great job in the broadcast all weekend. Like, he's like, oh, my gnome made it into his awesome backyard. I'm like, gnomes
are so
weird.
I need to watch something get molded in my yard.
My understanding
that
is there's people in the Southeast seem to get it. My brother lives in Charlotte, and it's like a rite of passage. Like, did you get a gnome? You know, and apparently there's tremendous resale value if you have the sets of all of these things.
Oh yeah, they were selling like all 10. Like the Masters were selling like 15. I think only 1,500 sets of all 10.
My thought process looking at the gnomes, because they had them when I walked in, was, what is my wife going to say to me when I walk into the house with a bleeping gnome on Friday morning? She's going to kick me in the head.
I think you're going to say, it got away from me. And I think that's...
I got lost in the moment.
It got away from me. What do you want?
The very first edition just sold yesterday at auction for $22,000.
Woo!
So the first year they did them, somebody resold
them. Yeah, I heard you could get like the miniature ones from every year for $2,000 in Berkman's place.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you have access, I walked past it
on my way out of the South Gate. That's the closest I got.
Yeah,
I don't know that $22,000 is getting you into Berkman's place.
No.
Boys, I just want to say thank you so much. There's so much more we could dive into, but we want to keep this at a reasonable length. So thank you so much. Hopefully people enjoyed and maybe get a little insight. And hopefully, you know, when they get the opportunity to go, they're going to know what to expect and what to get themselves into.
What a special place.
This has been a special edition of On the Tee.